So let's start off with how we met. My friend Jacob does art, and he was like, hey, I'm presenting my art at this gallery called AMT. You should check out Barbara. KBCS would love her. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I met you, and I was like, what? Being from Texas, I've never heard of a gallery where I can actually touch the art.
I opened an art gallery of my own down in Rainier Valley in 2014 called Mount Baker Neighborhood Center for the Arts. And it was an art space building that had just newly opened up. And I was committed to providing a gallery space for artists who were underserved by the mainstream arts community. And that included a lot of artist friends of mine who were immigrant artists, and so their first language was not English. And all of the grants that were available were written in English.
Oh, wow.
And so we started to sort of encourage different granting organizations to, you know, have an interpreter if someone wants to write a grant. And having been a community organizer and an advocate for people with disabilities my whole professional career, I was like, yeah, well, you know, there's some special challenges to getting through that morass of paperwork. And then I discovered that the granting agencies had a reimbursement process. Well, none of my artists had the money or the Visa card to pay ahead of time and get reimbursed. I said, well, that's a middle class ethic. And I'm sorry, but
Preach,
you're excluding people.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who's not, doesn't have a credit card and isn't middle class. I said, people that I work with, you know, they're paying their rent, they're buying food. They don't have extra income over here to go buy art supplies, you know? So I began to advocate for, you know, my artists and build up a cadre of artists in my gallery. It wasn't financially successful. And so 4 years after I opened and I closed the gallery, and we repositioned as Revision Arts. And I basically had the opportunity to then say, okay, my artists are still part of my cadre, and we can find other places to show our work. And that was how we first got connected with ANT Gallery, was through, they came to me down in my gallery on Rainier Avenue and said, we need a show. And I had a show at that time, it was spring, and it was called Flowers, Flores, and Uba, which is flowers in Somali. And they said, can we just take this show and and down to ANT? And I was like, sure. So that was my first connection with them and with Michelle Ishimitsu and Lonnie, who was running the gallery at the time. And ever since then, each year, we have had a public benefit show that was a tactile art show. And I have continued to encourage artists to consider having their work touched. And, you know, there's a cultural issue, I believe, in the United States, which is that art is precious. And I studied in Europe, and I touched Michelangelo's
work. I heard you say that, and that blew my mind. Like, they were okay. How does that work?
They were not. It was fine, you know?
Oh, my
gosh. And that, I mean, I really believe that we're all creative. And as part of the tradition, it's not looked at as sacred or other.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because I noticed there's something, I don't know, something similar between artists here in Seattle. Would you say that's an artist characteristic is to not be attached to any possession?
No, I wouldn't. I'd say that's probably an individual artist's personality. Yeah. There are many artists who are very attached to their work and wouldn't let it be touched. And there were many people who didn't want to be part of this show because they were like, no, I don't want somebody to touch my art.
Oh, that's unfortunate. And I feel like I have an emotional response to all of this.
But that's just it, because your senses are brought alive. Yeah. Not only are you seeing it with your eyes, but you're touching it with your hands. Yeah. And, you know, at the last exhibit at ANT this summer, I had found a quote that said, you know, your hands are the connections to your spirit.
Ooh.
And I thought that was a grand sentiment.
Yeah.
And also, when you can hear about the art, like, you'll notice that all of our art has audio description.
Yeah.
And, you know, people say, oh, well, that's nice, you do that for the blind people. I said, do you know how many dyslexic people there are in the world?
Literally.
You know, way more than folks who are visually challenged.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, as a person who's visually challenged and legally blind, if I blow it up to 24-point font, mm-hmm. I can read it. But if you're dyslexic, that's not necessarily helpful.
Yeah, at all.
You know, and so... You know, there's a reason why in college people's books came from an organization that was, you know, essentially named for the blind and dyslexic, because it's very difficult if you are not a reader to get information.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've found three or four different ways. We keep trying different ways to get the audio description accessible to people.
That is beautiful. Like I know at ANT when I first went to see, or my first experience at your show, there was a puppy, or it wasn't a real dog, it was a stuffed animal, but it was art. And we walked in, I said, oh, that dog looks crazy, I wish I could touch it. I didn't know yet, but when I walked in, I saw other people touching art. I was like, either Seattle is mad or people are just really
was it gold, was it glit?
Yeah.
Okay, so glit was an image from the guide dog that one of my artists, Pascal Helmensky, had. And the reality is that, you know, people love that piece.
Yeah.
They really love that piece. And
it brought me back to Beanie Babies. I loved it.
Yeah. But it was more sparkly than Beanie Babies.
That's what made it so great. The first time I've seen a piece that I wasn't sure the response until I touched it was yours, and I gotta ask, where is it coming from? Like, I get it, you protested for equality in art, but I feel like your art is showing that you protest for equality in everything, in everyday life.
Yes.
And after your speech is when I found out you were an activist. But before that, I feel like I kind of already knew, because of, I don't want to say embellishment, because you don't embellish anything, but there's certain parts of your art that shows a struggle. That's the part that's embellished in your art. How? do you purposely do that? Is it
art comes from our lives. Mm. It comes from our life experiences. And, you know, for those of us who have been excluded, have been diminished, or have been hurt, there needs to be a way to transcend that.
Yeah.
And I had a developmentally disabled brother who was the closest person I ever was with. And he was one of the kindest human beings that I ever met. He had 14 broken bones from kids twisting his arm and calling him names and tripping him.
I'm so sorry.
And as a child, the grown-ups, the quote principal of the school, when my parents went to say, hey, this is not okay.
Yeah.
The principal said, oh, the kids are just saying hi, buddy.
What?
Yes. So it was institutionalized abuse as well as, yeah. as, you know, and I was younger than he was. And I said then, when I grow up, if there's anybody I love and they have any problems, I'm going to be there for them.
It's been instilled in you from when you were younger. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, I will say this much. Please consider coming to the next show. Barbara's art and the people she keeps around her and close to her, all their art coincide. I can't really explain it. I will record it, but I promise you, you won't get the same experience unless you come and touch it.
So please come and touch the art.